If only they knew, the hub for young business minds.
Yes, people, welcome back to the If Only They Knew podcast. Today, I'm joined by Fabio Wardley, the heavyweight boxer coming out of Ipswich, who's currently on a 9-0 win streak. Today, he's going to talk to us about the similarities in mindset between young entrepreneurs and high-level athletes. Cool. All right. So, Fabio, thank you so much for coming on, mate. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on, especially after your latest win as well. And you're on a good win streak. So how does it feel to be one of the most exciting fighters in the heavyweight division at the moment?
Yeah, it feels good. It's an interesting feeling. Everything's moving pretty fast, but it's all going in the right direction. I'm happy with everything. So, yeah, just soaking it up and enjoying my moment and my time with it all.
Yeah, good. And for anyone sort of wondering, because most of my podcasts are with people who actually own a said business, and they're like fully fledged entrepreneurs. But in your case, I thought it was important to have someone like yourself on, because I feel like there's a weird sort of connection between high level athletes and entrepreneurs as well, in terms of both the mindset and even the actual process. If you look at it in a mad way, I sort of see boxers as freelancers, don't you think?
Like, yeah, I get what you mean.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I get what you are.
Yeah, so yeah, I thought it'd be important to have you on and sort of get your take on it, but especially the mindset stuff. But before we go deeper into sort of what you're up to at the moment and your win streak and all the good things, I always say it's important to find out who someone is now, to sort of rewind the clocks a bit and talk about what there was like when I was a bit younger. Obviously, you're young still, much like myself and everyone listening.
Yeah.
But when you was a bit younger at school and stuff, am I right in saying you was a bit of a naughty kid? I'm sure I heard you say that in a recent interview.
Yeah, I had my... I was always just... Don't get me wrong, even though I ended up in boxing, I was never particularly the aggressive person. I was never nasty or anything like that. I was just... I had a mouth. I was a bit mouthy, and I did what I wanted to do whenever I wanted to do it. And if I didn't want to do it, then I can tell you for nothing, like, I wasn't doing it. I was only doing the things I was interested in, and... And if you wanted to talk with me and go at it, we could go at it. And I was happy to do that. Like, so, yeah, that was a bit of me. I was that kind of guy as a kid. But it's just part of growing up, isn't it? You get a bit older, you kind of mature, and you learn to deal with things a bit differently. But I've still got a bit of that mouth. I just use it now in a different setting on press conferences and in interviews and a bit of this and that. So it's useful. It's worked out well for me in the end.
Yeah, of course. Where did that come from? Because I'm pretty much the same. Like, when I was a youngster, I don't know where I got this confidence from to be so, like, brash and to just be so, like, independent. And if I thought something, I'd say it. And if, like you said, if you disagreed, we can go at it if you want. But I, in my head, like, I was sort of like my own solicitor. Like, I had all my arguments already backed up and stuff. So where did that come from for you? Do you think it's natural, or do you reckon it's something you picked up?
I think it's pretty natural. I think a lot of the... just not even like idols or people I looked up to, but just like big people you would see, they always had quite large personalities and they were always outspoken and they spoke their mind. And I just always saw that as a quality as a person, that something I would kind of want to emulate and want to get behind. And I want to be that type of person that doesn't get pushed around verbally or doesn't get kind of bullied around in a conversation, that I can hold my own and I can conversate and get on well with someone like that. So that's probably where that came from, just in a sense of wanting to be able to kind of stand there on my own too and have that conversation with you if you want to.
And the way you're talking there, it seems like a natural link that you would then go on to become a boxer, like you said, that want and desire to sort of stand on your own two feet and have that confrontation physically and sort of in a verbal sense. But am I right in saying you sort of didn't have that ambition to be a boxer when you was younger? You're sort of doing other bits, weren't you?
Yeah, no, I didn't. Like, it was never a thing for me from a young age to want to be a boxer or to even want to get into boxing necessarily. Like, I watched it as a very, very kind of casual fan of, I watched the big fights and when the big people are on and blah, blah, blah. And as I watched them, I never really looked at it like, oh, I really want to do that. That's really what I want to be. But then it's weird how on the outskirts of something, when you're on the outside of it, it's not really that appealing to you. But then once you're in the thick of it and you finally got involved and it kind of sucks you in, that you realise that, you know what, this is my thing and this is for me.
So most of the entrepreneurs, like I said, that I get on, they sort of go through a similar path. Like, they all sold sweets at school and they was all getting like told off for selling Lucozades, and they all sort of went for a similar thing. Was you independent in that sense as well? Was you like the one wheeling and dealing in the school, like selling classroom cookies?
Yeah.
Or was you quite sort of like heading the books almost?
It's funny. It's funny because they're the two things. It would be that and chewing gum.
Really?
It would be Lucozades. I'd buy like a pack of six. Yeah. And like a six of like the mini Lucozades, and I'd sell them for like, I think the pack would be like, what, £2-3 maybe. Yeah. And I'd sell them for like £1 a bottle, or like I'd sell like chewing gum for like 25-50p a bit. So like chewing gum was the one in school. That was the one you could get from quite easy because everyone wanted it, and it was only like 50p a go, so it was easy to make off. But
but
I'd like, that was just one of those things I did as a kid just to like kind of like, as you say, like make a bit of money and just do something a bit different.
Yeah. But like in terms of the subjects and that, was there any subject in particular that you sort of liked? Like obviously as a sort of outsider, I guess it would be PE, but I feel like it may not be, right?
Yeah, I always enjoyed, like, I enjoyed PE because I was good at it. Like I was good at running, jumping, football, rugby, whatever. I'm lucky enough to be kind of naturally athletic that I can get into most sports and do half decent at any level. So PE was kind of a given. I just did well at the stuff I found interesting. Like, I always enjoyed business a lot. I did a business course, ICT, I was doing computing and things like that. They're the type of things I found interesting. So they're the ones I kind of did well at. And then if I got my grades up and you could look at them, you would see the classes I was interested in just by my grades of, I'll do the bare minimum to get by in English and maths and C and science and blah, blah, blah. I'll get C's all across the board, enough to get through. But then the classes I want to do well in, like business, I got a B in, and like ICT, I got an A star in and things like that. So like I did well at the things I was interested in, but if I wasn't interested, there's no way you would get me into it.
Yeah, I'm the same. But do you think like there's anything wrong with that? Because I try and sort of, whenever I get someone on, I always try and like find out where the fine line is, like between doubling down on what you like, but then there's also you can try and double down on what you like, but then you can really avoid what you hate. And there's a fine line between getting that balance right, where you're not just stuck with like as a like one trick pony or whatever the term is.
Yeah.
What's your sort of take on that? Do you think double down, or do you think try and cover everything?
It's a mix between both, isn't it? You're trying not to be a one trick pony, but then at the same time you don't want to be a jack of all trades where you're just in everything. Like, It's a hard one to kind of manage, but I would always pick doubling down on whatever's works for you first, like in whatever it was, like even if you relate it to boxing, to business, whatever, that one skill you have, that one thing you can do well, if you have a great jab in boxing, then you use that. That's your go-to. That's what you do to set up your shots. That's what you do to get you out of trouble. That's what you do to set the next one up, or whatever it is. You start with that, and then once you've got that concrete and solid and you know that inside out, then you move on to the next one. Okay, so what am I not so good at? Okay, so let's work on this, and where does that not fit with me, and where can I improve? I think you start by doubling down on things. I think you really kind of hone your core skills or whatever they are, and you make sure they're kind of crisp and sharp. And then once you've got those, then you start kind of looking at the outside stuff.
Yeah, I like that. And I think it's like you said, it's different for everyone. Like, some people may prefer to do one thing, some people may prefer to do another. Like, it's quite a coincidence that I've got you on, because I'm doing the white collar at the moment for the first time. Right. Done a bit of, like, you know, like in the clubs and that, in the boxing clubs, I've done a bit of training and stuff like that. But it's the first time I've sort of done the white collar. And again, it's sort of a case like, you know, like the coach will say, do this to the whole class. But I'm 5'5". Yeah. I'm the skinniest person you'll ever meet. I'm the tiniest person you'll ever meet. So for me, trying to emulate what someone like a 6 foot guy, like hench guy, is doing, it just isn't going to work. So I think it is literally a case of stick to what you know you're good at, no matter what anyone else is saying, you know?
Yeah. What fits for you. Cause we're all very individual. We all have complete different skill sets. One thing works for one person that completely doesn't work for the other. So it's about being open to whatever's coming your way, whatever ideas, whatever things are coming towards you, but then having the kind of the clarity to be like, okay, cool, that doesn't work for me, that's not fitting, that needs to go, and this does work, cool, so I need to figure that out some more. Now I need to work on that, I need to double it down. So yeah, it's just about, like you said at the beginning, it's kind of a bit of a balancing act with it.
Yeah, it is. And talking of the white collar, I'm 22, and like I said, I just started the white collar for the first time. It would be very ballsy for me after a couple white collar fights to go pro. So that's what made me want to get you on. I wanted to find out what you was thinking to that gave you that confidence to go from white collar, no amateur fight, straight into pro. Because anyone that knows a bit about boxing will know that the white collar, there's a massive jump to then amateur. Mm. There's a massive jump to pro. So to go from stage one straight to stage three, it's just nuts. So what was your sort of mindset like? Did you rack up a lot of white collar fights beforehand? And what was that whole process like for you?
So it was just taking advantage of the opportunity while the opportunity was in front of me. That was how I saw it. So I first ever put on a pair of gloves at 20 years old, and then I did white collar for a few years, and I only had 4 white collar fights in total. That was all I had. And then the opportunity came to me to someone to turn pro. They said, look, you look half decent, you could do something. Do you want to turn pro? And at that point, I had a decision to make of, do I feel I'm ready? No, I don't feel I'm there. But is this opportunity going to come again? Do I know that for a certain? If I say no now, is it going to be there in 2 years when maybe I am better than where I am right now? But is that opportunity actually going to be there? So I didn't know that. And I didn't know that for a certain. The only certain I knew was the opportunity is here now. So I knew that if I took advantage of that, at least that way it's there, and I can put all the training in, I can do all the work that I need to do, I can catch up,
yeah,
do what I've got to do to get there. And that was how I viewed it. I just viewed it as, look, like a lot of my decisions and things that I do in life, I see them as quite black and white. I think I'm quite fortunate in that I don't really kind of dwell on stuff too much. I looked at it for what it was, and I said, look, do you want to do this? Yes. Is the opportunity here now? Yes. Go for it then. Let's go. We'll just do it. We'll learn on the job. We'll figure it out. But you don't know how to drive until you start taking driving lessons. Like,
yeah, that's
it's
true.
It's just one of those things. You just need to kind of get in the car and get going and figure it out as you go.
Yeah.
And that was how me and my team viewed it.
It is such a weird feeling. Like, you know, when you get, like you said, to get presented with opportunities, and it almost, with some opportunity, it seems like a life or death like situation. Like, if I take it, it may work, it may not. But then if I don't take it, who knows what will happen? And you can sort of get caught up. And that's what I do a lot. So I'm going to try and adapt your sort of black and white mentality and just say, do I want to do it? Yes, do it. Do I not want to do it? Okay, no, I don't want to do it. Don't do it. Because I think about, but what if I do it for this long and then that happens? Or what if this person? And I try and think too detailed into it.
Yeah.
Right with that. Just, do you want to do it? Yes. Do you like it? Yes. Do it. Like, there's no sort of leeway in that, is there?
Nah. And that's what I'm thankful to myself for. That it's helped me with a lot, especially in boxing, to make a lot of clear cut decisions that I just look at them for what they are. And will this benefit me? Yes. Okay. How? So what do I get from it? And what don't I get from it? And what will it give me? And what will it take away from me? And just, it's almost as simple as weighing up the pros and cons and going, yeah, okay, I'm going this way with it. Or I'm going that way with it. And then just, once you've made that decision, just learning to be at peace with yourself, regardless of the outcome. Or the thing with me is, I'm happy with any decision I've ever made in my life, as long as I'm the one that's made it.
Mm.
I think the only times I've been angry at decisions or upset at things are when I've let people in my ear to say, oh, you should probably do that.
Yeah.
And whether it's worked out well or it's worked out bad, I look at it for like, hang on, but that wasn't me. I didn't make that decision. That was someone else in my ear. So as long as, whatever the decision, like if I made the decision to turn pro and I lost my first 3 fights and gave up, cool, I can live with that, as long as I'm the one that made that decision in myself, that said, now we're going to do this. And if it doesn't work out, then cool, I tried and whatever, and it's on to the next one. It's not the end of the world.
Do you think that everything happens for a reason? I know it's deep, and everyone that listens to these podcasts would be laughing, because I always try and slot this in somewhere because it's something I've been looking at. But yeah, do you think everything happens for a reason, or are you just sort of, like you said, take on the mindset that, you know, just it is what it is sort of thing?
Yeah, there's a certain element of just, I think the basis of me is it is what it is. Like, you take everything for what it is. Does everything happen for a reason? Probably, but I think you can get lost with that a bit, that you can always look for that reason and try and find it in the moment or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Whatever little reason you're looking for, if that went wrong and you went, oh yeah, see, that's because da 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 that happened. If you're looking for that, you can find it. So I don't really subscribe to that too much. I more go for the, like, it is what it is, and I just take it for what it is, the face value of it, and I run with it from there.
Yeah. Has anyone ever done that before, like, in talking of the white collar, gone straight from white collar to pro? From my knowledge, I haven't heard of anyone that has sort of made that huge jump in boxing.
There has been a few that have done it. Don't get me wrong, I'm not a complete trailblazer. I'm not the first to ever do it. There's definitely some that's done it before me. There's only one I know of, and I think his name was Nick Blackwell, if I remember him well, when he fought Chris Eubank Jr. I think he's one of the few that I remember that definitely came from white collar. But other than that, I don't know too many names. But I think I quite enjoy that as well, that it allows me doing what I'm doing and coming from where I come from allows the confidence, I think, for other people to do it. Like, if they want to get into boxing, but white collar is the only option to them, that whereas before people probably looked at that as there's no way I can get in then. Whereas they can now look at me and say, no, it can be done. Like, there is a way to do it. And I enjoy that. That's something I'm thankful for.
And again, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're from Ipswich, right, as well. So I don't think there's been many heavyweight boxers, especially from that region, that sort of taken the national stage, right?
No, definitely not heavyweight. I don't think there's been any heavyweights from here at all. I don't think there has. We've had a few boxers in our time over the few years and stuff, but no one that's really made massive waves or anything that's done anything particularly massive. There was one guy a while ago called Steve Spartacus, and I think he got to he won the British title, maybe something like that. But around that level, I think there was that. But that was near on 20, 25 years ago.
Oh, really?
Something like that. So it wasn't anything particularly recent or anything like that. So yeah, I'm the first in a while, which again is another thing to kind of be proud of and take on my shoulders and say, just another pointer to say that you can come from Ipswich, a quiet little town off the way, like not in a big city, you're not surrounded by big boxers or anything like that. But as long as you've got the grit and the drive and you're willing to commit to it, then you can do something with it.
Well, talking about being surrounded by big boxers, like, you sparred with Usyk, Fury, White, Chisora, like, you sparred with some big names, right? And you've sort of obviously been taken under Dillian White's wing. We'll sort of talk about that a bit later on. But yeah, how does it feel to sort of be surrounded by all these big names? Like, how much have you learnt from them? Or is it just a case of, like, you're in your own sort of bubble?
Nah, it's been massive. That was the gap me and my team saw, was that, okay, cool. So we've come from white collar. We haven't got all the big background and the big experience that everyone else has. Okay, cool. So what's the best way to go get that? Is just to, again, throw yourself in, learn to drive, just chuck yourself in with these guys. Like, don't get me wrong, the first time I sparred all those guys, they punched me around the place. Like, wanted to get out, but it's a weird feeling to, like, you go one week and you get punched up, and then you go the next week and you get punched up, but a little bit less. And then you go the next week and there's a little bit less, and then you're figuring it out. It's like a painful game of chess almost, that you're just slowly, slowly getting better at. So, and that was how we viewed it. So we just took any and every opportunity that came our way. Anyone that called and said, can you come spar? Can you come do this? Can you come do that? We always said yes, regardless what was going on. We decided that if we was going to do this, and actually the only way to make something of it and to kind of close that gap between me and the people that are ahead of me is to get that sparring and get that experience that I'm lacking. And that's what we did. And thankfully, I've had the privilege of sparring some top, top guys. So they've helped me loads.
And, like, with the Usyk situation, am I right in saying it was he sent you a Facebook message? His team sent you a Facebook message and just, like, flew you over. What?
How did that,
it's so random, like.
So weird, because, again, I was still quite early into my career and stuff. I think I'd only maybe had about five fights, something like that. I wasn't well known. I wasn't with Dillian at that point either. So I wasn't known at all. I was just undercover. I don't know how they came across me or whatever, but they did. And they said, it was weird. I just got, like, a random Facebook message. And, like, because that had been the first time it had ever happened to me before as well. I didn't know if that was the right process. I always thought it was, like, when you hear about these big guys going to spar other guys and whatever, I thought it'd be something official, like a proper email, or so-and-so's manager has emailed you to say, would you like to do? And it was literally just an email saying, hi, Fabio, do you want to come to Ukraine for 2 weeks and spar Usyk? And I was like, what? like, are you all right? Like, what's going on? So, like, me and my team, we did a bit of, like, checking and digging and realised that it was a genuine invite and stuff. And we just said, yeah. So, not like a few weeks later, I was in Ukraine on my ones just sparring with Usyk.
How was that whole process, like, going over there in a new, almost like a new game, new scenario, new country with new people all by yourself? Like, I know that sounds like such a babyish thing to say, but for me, like, I try to be independent, but I do like having my little comforts, whether it's to someone I know or at least a country that I know or a place, you know what I mean? So how was that for you, sort of just going over there all by yourself?
Yeah, it was, again, like I said about the black and white thing, the way I looked at it was, do I want to go? Do I need to go? Yes. Okay, is it going to be weird? Am I on my own? Yeah, but none of that matters. None of that matters. You said you want to go, so you're going to go. You're going to do it. Like, and in my head, I'm thankful to myself that I can do that. I can separate them little things that are like, oh yeah, but you're going to be in Ukraine on your own. You don't know anyone there. You don't speak the language. You've never done this before, and you don't know what they're going to think, and blah, blah, blah. I just decided that I wanted to go, regardless, again, like, if I did well, if I did bad, cool, it doesn't matter. I went, and I tried it, and I got that experience. But, yeah, thankfully, it was a great experience. I got there. It was a bit, like, shifty, because I got picked up. I got picked up at the airport. There was a guy with a sign of my name and stuff, which was, like, cool, like a little life goal for me to tick off, which was funny. And he didn't speak English, so he just had his sign, and I pointed at him saying, like, that's me, and he went, okay, come. So I just followed him to the car, and then it was like quite a beat up, like, van thing that I got into, and I just got into the back of the van as well, and all the windows are like blacked out. So I was like, right, I'm lonely, like, black man in the middle of Ukraine, just got into the back of a van, like, what's going on here, like, where what are we doing? Like, what's the crack? Like, how is this going to end up? But thankfully, like, I got to the hotel. It was cool. Everything was really good. And then it just went from there, really. And then the same guy picked me up, I think, a day later to go to sparring. And then I met Usyk and the team and everyone. And it was happy days from there onwards. Became good friends. So, yeah, it was great. Overall, a great experience.
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, it's definitely a good experience, a good thing to tick off. But is Usyk as crazy as he seems online? Like, have you seen his messages to Chisora, hey Derek, and all stuff like that? Like, is he in that mentality all the time?
Yeah, he's genuinely that mental, like, he is. But it's all like, as you see it, and as you, like, what you see is what you get with him. Like, he's still, he's very funny, he's very jokey, he enjoys it, but he is, like, mental at the same time. He'll piss about and laugh and scream and joke and dance, and but he'll get you involved, and he'll make sure you're welcome, and he'll have a laugh with you, and he'll joke around with you, and all sorts. We did all sorts of stupid stuff while we were there, but just lighthearted and just messing around. Like, it's cool. It's a good environment to be in, that they just make you feel welcome. You don't feel like, oh, I'm just here to do a job. You do your rounds, and then they move you away to the side. Like, you're around them, you train with them, you'll have the laugh before and you'll have a laugh after and everything. So yeah, they're good. They're good to be around. They're good people.
And talking of, like, what you mentioned just before that as well, like, sort of the doubts that you had to push aside, like, oh, I don't know anyone, I don't know this, don't know that, before you went. And like you said, thanks to your black and white sort of ideology, you can sort of just choose one side and not the other. Mm. But like, speaking to Rob Icy, as you know as well, you spoke to
him.
Speaking to him, he was talking to me quite recently about limiting beliefs, and I feel like that's obviously part of that. And it's something I do a lot. Like, even if I'm messaging someone to come on the podcast, I think, oh, but I don't really know him that well, or this or that. And like, I come up with, like you said, you come up with stories to almost put yourself down. And it sounds so stupid, because once you realise you're doing it, you're like, what am I doing this for? It's such a hard thing to sort of overcome.
Because the funniest one with it as well is that when you do it and you've come up with all these ideas how it's not going to work, how it's going to go wrong, and then you've done it, and then it goes as easy as pie, and you've gone, why have I just wasted like an hour of like talking to myself in the head of all this stuff that could go wrong, when it's just gone as easy as, do you want to come on? Yeah, mate, that'd be great. Ah, sort of done deal. Like, what? Like, and then you look at yourself like, why was I doing all that for? It is one of those things, and I think everyone does it, but it's just something you kind of learn about yourself, and you learn to figure out and just kind of take it for what it is.
And speaking of Rob as well, obviously he does a lot on mindset, and when you were speaking to him, like, I believe you said you don't visualize as much. Like, a lot of the boxers that I sort of look up to and stuff, they always say, oh, I visualized every shot. I visualized this being in the change rooms and all that. But am I right in saying you sort of, you're more comfortable with the experience you have and the knowledge you have that you can just go in there and whatever comes up, you'll be able to face it within that moment. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly that. Exactly that. That's how I view it. I don't, like, don't get me wrong. Sometimes when you're shadow boxing in the mirror, you're kind of imitating the fight a bit and little bits and bobs, but nothing. I don't do anything particularly extensive to be like really kind of visualize the fight. Like I said to Rob, I felt like as long as I ticked all my own boxes, as long as I trained right, prepared right, studied right on the opponent and did all those things, the outcome's going to be what I want it to be as long as I did that. The only time I have ever panicked in my career has been them times early in my career where I didn't always put 100% into the training sometimes, and I know that I missed that run, or I know that I didn't make that session, or I know that I didn't do that. And then that's the only time ever in my life, especially in boxing, where I've doubted myself a bit, where I've been there and I thought, sugar, like, if this goes 6 rounds, I'm in trouble. Like, I didn't do all that. Or if he hits me with this good shot, then I haven't prepared properly for that. And they're the only times that I've really kind of only ever doubted myself and my skill set. But from then on, when I knew that, and as soon as I realized that about myself as well, that was something I changed. I was like, cool. Because like the only time I get panicky or nervous in the ring is when I realize I haven't trained properly or I've missed something. So if I cut that out, then I'm chilled all the way through. And that was something I realized early on and kind of got out of my game.
And again, like what we said at the start, this sort of, no matter what walk of life you're in, no matter what game you're in, this is sort of all, it's all the same stuff really, isn't it? Like if you don't prepare, say you're at school, you don't prepare for the exam, you miss a lesson here and there. I did it. I missed like a few English lessons, like for a few weeks, come to the exam. I was literally sitting there sweating because I was like, oh my God, like I know this is what they covered and the lessons they missed. Yeah. And it is literally a case. If you don't show up, like you can't sort of, what's that saying? If fail to prepare, prepare to fail. And I think that speaks wonders to me.
Yeah, me too. It is the thing is that you just need to, like, preparation is massive. Is that, like, as much as, like, sometimes, like, something I listen, sometimes I listen to, like, motivational, like, not stories, but, like, just conversations and chats and things and blah, blah, blah. And something that always stuck in my head was that sometimes, like, you just need to show up and that's it. You just need to be there. You don't need some days, like 90% of it, I think, is just about showing up. It's just doing the work, regardless of how you feel, regardless if you're tired, if you hurt, if you're not in the mood, if you want to do something else. Okay. But 90% of the game, I think, in any game is just showing up. It's just being there. It's doing what you know you're supposed to do. Those things that you should be ticking off your list. And that was something that kind of sat with me a lot. So whenever them days do come that, oh, I don't really, like, I don't feel like going for a run today. Like, I'm tired, it hurts, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, but just do it. And then that's it. And then it's over. Just go. Just all you got to do is go. And it's like, it's funny because I have little conversations with myself all the way through. So I'm like, so I'm laying down. I'm like, okay, just get up. Just get up and put your clothes on. Then see where you are from there. Okay, oh, cool. I've got my clothes on now. Okay. So just get your shoes on then. Just put your shoes on. See where you are from there. Okay, cool. Got my shoes on. All right, go out the front and just jog. Just jog lightly and then see where you end up. Okay, I'm jogging. It's cool. It feels all right. Okay, so just go a bit faster. Okay, cool. Here we go. And then next thing you know, like, I've done my half an hour run, my 40-minute bike ride, whatever it is. But it's just those little increments of those questions and those kind of questions and answers with yourself, of just that little, giving yourself that little bit more. Go on, just push it that little bit further. Just see a little bit further you can go. Go on, you can do a little bit more. Go on, go. And that's something that's helped me massively, is just realizing that about myself, that if I do just get to that next step, I can always then get to the next one after. And it's just about those little increments of steps as opposed to looking at the whole plan.
No, I love that. And do you think, obviously, you're early on in your career and I'm early on in my sort of field of work as well. Do you think it's almost harder in the earlier stages because you've sort of got to put everything together? And like you said, once you start getting a few things down, like a few fights under your belt or a few podcasts under my belt, once you do one or two, it becomes easier and easier. Do you sort of share that mentality as well?
Yeah, definitely. Because before you've done it, there's loads of questions, isn't there?
Yeah.
There's loads of questions of, oh, okay, so how long do I do the podcast for? Okay, so how many questions do I ask? Okay, but can I ask that? Is that rude? Or do I ask that about that? Or should I do that? Is that okay? And just as you go and as you do it more and you do it more, you realize that, oh, okay, that's fine. That works. That doesn't work. Again, it's just a big game of like trial and error, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Just figuring it out. It's just going, okay, that's cool. Okay, that one was a bit too long because of that. And that conversation didn't flow too well because that didn't work there. And I shouldn't have asked that. I should have saved that to the end. And once you do that, you've just, it's because when you start something new, it's like a, there's like hundreds and hundreds of question marks. And then slowly and slowly, you're just like ticking them off, going, okay, I know what the answer is to that one now. I know what the answer is to that now. I know what the answer is to that. Like with me and my training and stuff, I'm like, how much should I run? Okay, cool. So, well, this camp, we ran that way and that felt all right. But I felt like I had a bit more. So next camp, we'll do a bit more. Okay, we did a bit more, but now I feel too tired. Okay, so we'll take a little bit off. And it's just like you finding like the answers to yourself. And with me, it's about the questions I have are about me and my body. Like, how far can I push it to where I'm still in peak condition, but I'm not breaking down where everything hurts and I'm falling apart. So that's something I've managed to figure out now over a good few rounds of kind of doing my training camps and knowing when to ramp it up and when to slow it down.
And I think like you always have some sort of questions that you can answer or little tweaks. Like even now I'm looking at myself and I'm thinking the lighting's terrible. I've got like rabbit fingers because I got bit by a dog, and I forgot to tell you before as well. I forgot to say. So like, there's all like little tweaks. Like, don't put your hand in a dog's mouth. Make sure the lighting's fine beforehand. Do you know what I mean? There's like, no matter what stage, there's always something you can say. Oh, you know what? I should have done that. Should have done this. Or, but I think in terms of that, you shouldn't like look on it and dwell on it, saying I should have done this. You should look at it and say, I will do this next time. Like, I know it's pretty much the same thing, but I feel like it's just a slight change in mentality, a slight skew in the mindset. And I think that puts you on to focusing forward rather than focusing on what's behind you, saying, oh, I should have done this. You'd be able to say, no, next time I will do that. I think
literally that. Making it a positive instead of going, oh, as a negative view to it, going, oh, I didn't do that. And the positive view of it or the positive spin of it is, okay, so next time I know that I need to do that. Cool. That's the best way to look at it, I think.
But just a minute ago, we were speaking about like being in the early stages and stuff. And obviously you're 9-0, right? With eight KOs.
I had to check myself.
But with like we said, in these early stages, do you ever like find yourself on occasion sort of looking past this stage, or are you sort of really grounded and saying, no, okay, I need to get all these fights under my belt until I can get to this stage? Or are you sort of always dreaming, oh, I'll get to that stage soon, and you're sort of overlooking it? What are your sort of views at the moment?
No, I've never been one to really overlook where I am currently, because I still look at it as like I shouldn't be here technically, based off where I come from and the background and my general just boxing background and my boxing experience. I shouldn't really be at the level I'm at. So I shouldn't really be where I am. So then I view that as, so just make sure you pay attention to every moment, kind of in the moment. Don't worry about what comes, because if you'd have said, like, before I'd started boxing, if someone said to me, oh yeah, by the way, Fab, in 5 years, you're going to be English heavyweight champion and you're going to be 9-0. I'd be like, what are you on about? Like, I don't even like boxing, so I don't know what you're talking about, for starters. Like, it would just... So I think sometimes you can get carried away with looking at the massive goal too much, where sometimes it's just brick by brick. Sometimes you just have to look at it for what it is day by day and just take that. And I think that's the... Especially for me, that's the best way that I view things and I deal with everything. Because otherwise, I think you can sometimes get carried away, and that's when you start to get... You put extra pressure on yourself and extra nerves on yourself, and it can all get a bit too much and get a bit on top of you. Whereas if you just look at it day by day and go, cool, so my objective for today is do all my training sessions to the max, do this, do that, do this interview, do that, tick that off, and then cool, that's Tuesday ticked off. And then we go to Wednesday, and what's Wednesday's goals? Okay, do that. Every now and then I do take some time to look and like stop, but I try not to dip into that area of my head kind of too much. I try to stay away from it a bit, just because you can get lost in the lights of it all.
Oh yeah, definitely. And like you said just there, like there's small little steps that you could never have imagined, like one of them being fighting in someone's back garden. Like even that was mad. Like, what was that whole experience like? And especially where you're signed to Dillian White as well, that sort of, it was such a great experience, I feel like, from an outsider's perspective, that whole event, plus the fact that for you were signed by Dillian White as well. So it really gave you a bit of oomph before you actually come onto the fight, you know? So yeah, how was that whole experience at fight camp?
Yeah, it was fantastic. It was fantastic. Again, it was one of those new things that, like, is a bit weird, but you just have to go, what, am I going to say no to this opportunity? No, I'm not. I'm going to do it. Okay, cool. So push everything to the side and let's go. Let's do it and take it for what it is. And it was weird for me and it was weird for all of the boxers there. We all found it in them first day or so. We found it a bit strange and everyone was a bit like, kind of, how's this work and what's the rules and what do we do? And like, we're all kind of, because in the pre-fight build up in the week before your fight, you have all your kind of obligations of the press conference, the weigh-in, the workout and that. But you usually just, you go to that event for a few hours and then you go back to doing whatever you do to help you prep for that week or your fight week or whatever. Whereas everything was so on top of it that you never really escaped it, which was a good and a bad for some people. Like, some people like that escapism. They like to only be in it for what it is and then get away and then kind of go back to in themselves and stay calm about it. Whereas others kind of thrive on being full throttle in the moment with it all. But it was like I said, it was just a bit like being in your own little boxing bubble world. It was weird. It was funny that it was called the bubble, to be honest, because that's what it was. Because everyone in there was boxing crazy, was about the show that was going to happen. You were either fighting, you were training someone, you were commentating on the fight, whatever it was all about the next few days and stuff. So you could just never escape it, which was quite enjoyable. And it was a unique experience and something I really enjoyed.
No, definitely. I always think, no matter what game you're in, if you can be surrounded by people with a similar mind, that's the perfect place to be in. You know, if everyone's on the same page, then you're only going to advance somehow.
Yeah, definitely. And it was a great opportunity to be forced in a situation where you're around a lot of boxing heads just consistently. Whereas I'd have usually gone to like the press conference, maybe done a few interviews after, then gone back to my room or back to wherever. But now I'm around like different coaches and different managers and we're talking, we're having little chats, we're building little relationships and just little things, like even having little jokes with people and just stuff that you begin to kind of build different interests and different relationships with things and just make connections. And some of those have been good for me, which has been great.
Talking about connections in the boxing world, who are some of your favourite boxers at the moment? Because I heard you say Lomachenko, is that right?
Yeah, someone I look to a lot. Yeah, Lomachenko is someone I look to a lot. A lot of the smaller weights are something I look to, me personally, just because I like to kind of, I want to bring that element into heavyweight boxing. I want to be that guy that can move and do things that the lower weight classes are usually kind of on their own in doing, whereas you don't see heavyweights do those things. So that's where I look to him. I look to little things that he does and stuff and I pick little bits from it that I think could work for me in my game. And yeah, I have a lot of interest in Lomachenko.
Because I see that, I'm glad you said that, because in terms of like bringing certain elements in, because I was watching some of your fights the other day and I noticed your footwork and the way you were sort of pivoting around the people. And it was sort of a very Lomachenko-esque sort of style, like the pivoting and the footwork and sort of being in front. And then as they go to throw a shot, you're not there. And I think, was that sort of subconsciously or not sort of taken from Lomachenko? Or is it just sort of, are you like picking up different traits from everyone at the moment?
Yeah, I'm still in my very early kind of learning stage. I'm still figuring out me wholly as a fighter. And again, like we were saying before, what works, what doesn't, picking them bits and throwing away what doesn't work. And I found a good solid base of things, of punches, of moves and stuff that work for me. And then from them, we're just building and adding different bits and taking bits out. And that's where I take that from, is from watching them different fighters. And literally, as simple as it sounds, just watching them on like TV or YouTube or wherever, I'm going, okay, so he does that, he moves there and that works there. And then I'll go into the gym and I'll try it like on the bag first and I'll see how that feels. And then I'll get my coach to kind of imitate it and then see how that works. And then when I'm at a certain point with it that I feel I'm comfortable enough, then I'll take it into sparring and I'll try and use it. And then there's been times where I've tried certain things and it's worked on the bag and then it's worked on the pads and stuff with the coach. And I've got into sparring and I've got hit straight in the face and I've gone, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
It looks good for him over there, but that does not work for me in here. Like, so it's a funny game that you almost have to play with yourself, that you build it, you build it, you build it, and then you get to a point where, okay, yeah, that does or that doesn't work. And that's just, it's just about being kind of open to new ideas and figuring things out. And that's another thing I love about boxing, is that there's so many different ways to do different things, is that it's just a constant learning curve.
Mm. It's clearly working, because like I said, 9-0, and you look to be on a great track. How do you sort of like reward yourself, or are you in like, are you one of those like weird guys, sort of like me? Even though I sort of do well, it's just never enough, so I don't reward myself enough as I probably should. Or are you sort of, after every fight, do you go and get like the Five Guys or the Burger King, whatever, and sort of reward yourself after each sort of increment? Or how do you sort of see the reward?
Yeah, I'm good with myself in that, because I think I know myself well enough that I need that.
Yeah.
That I need, as much as, because when it's go time, when it's camp time, I'm quite good at what I say is having a switch, so I can turn it on and off pretty easily. I can know, okay, there's a fight booked, I have to train. There's no excuses. There's no going out. There's no doing this. There's no doing that. That's got to happen. And for me to be able to do that, I need to know that at the end of it, I'm allowed to flick that switch back the other way, and I'm allowed to then go out and have a drink with my friends and have some bad food and stay up late and do whatever and blah, blah, blah. So I think that's where that works for me the best, is that I do give myself them rewards once the job is done. That's the thing in my head, like, oh, midway through camp, I'd be like, God, I do want to go out tonight and just like have some bad food and have a beer with my mates. Yeah, but you can do that when the job's done. That's there at the end for you. It's there waiting for you just at the end. But just do what you've got to do right now. And then in 4 weeks, in 5 weeks or whenever, that's there waiting for you. You can do that. But just make sure you do what you've got to do right now. So that's how I look at it. I've kind of, again, it goes back to kind of the black and white thing of just the on and off of the switch, of just knowing that I need to do this now, and then later the rest will come.
No, I love that. Definitely, I need to sort of be a bit more rewarding to myself as well, but I'm sure I'll get it right. But like we said earlier, we're both very, very young, and it made me think about the power of young people and the power that we all have, and the potential that we have. We can do so much. So if you don't mind, if I can try and get you to sort of give one bit of advice for the young people listening, no matter what area they're in, whether it's business, sport, or they're just sort of looking to be of some sort of success, if I can try and get you to think of a bit of advice for them.
My biggest advice, and probably it sounds simple and probably not like the greatest motivational quote ever, but my biggest advice would be consistency is key. Mm. I think that's to anything. I think, just like we were saying earlier, when 90% of the game is just showing up, it's just doing it. It's doing it when you don't feel like it. It's doing it when you don't want to do it. It's doing it when there's something better you could be doing, but just doing it anyway. I think that's my biggest belief. And I think what's got me to where I am, as opposed to other people that may have tried it and not got somewhere, is that I know that I have it in my head that as long as I do all these things, the outcome is almost guaranteed. But if I miss these things, then the outcome is a bit shaky and I don't know what I'm going to get. But as long as I do this stuff and I go when I'm supposed to go and I do what I'm supposed to do, then I'm cool, I'm on track and everything's in a good place. So, yeah, my biggest thing would just be consistency. And not to worry about, oh, you need to be here by then or you need to do that by then. It's just, especially for young people, like especially now, I have a lot of young people come to me and say, oh, they want to turn pro and they want to do this and they want to do that. And I'm like, cool, you're 17. For starters, you've got 3 years on me. Yeah. I started at 20. So you've got 3 years on me already. And you're saying you want to turn pro like next year and that. Just relax, like take your time with it. Let things, I think we live in a world, especially because of social media is a massive part of that, that people, they go on social media and they see people that are already kind of at the back end of their game. They've got all the nice stuff. They're getting all the accolades, all the kind of the prizes, the rewards from it all. And people look at that and they go, I want that now. I want that right now. Whereas no one on Instagram puts up their like their boring part of when they started in the beginning and I wasn't doing that well and I had the shitty car and I had the not nice this and not nice that. The only one ever shows the end bit. So I think that's why everyone's so eager to always want that. But I think they're my I guess you can put them together and say they're two bits of advice, is that to take your time with the process, but always stay consistent.
No, I love that. Thank you for that, by the way. So we've spoken about the past, the present, but we'll close off, if you don't mind, by talking about the future. Now, straight after fight camp, I don't know whether you saw it, a few people like shouted you out. David Adelaide, I think Cash Ali was in the mix as well, and a few other people. Mm. But in terms of fights, upcoming fights, who's on your radar? Who do you want? And yeah, what sort of who's sort of taking your eye at the moment?
I never really have done. I probably never really will hunt for people individually.
Yeah,
they're not like that's never been a massive thing for me, even in the start of my career. Like people, especially now that I've got a belt and stuff, people want to say my name and they want to talk about me and want to come after me, which is fine. I welcome it. It's part of the game. I have no issue with that whatsoever. But me personally, I don't really hunt for people individually. The only kind of name that really has been spoken about quite a bit is me and Dave Allen. Which is the fight me and Dave have spoke about between us, and we've both said we're keen for and we'd happily do, which is fine. And the reason that's about is because we both want to go for the British title in the near future, and it just seems like at some point we will meet to do that. So that's the only reason. It has nothing to do with Dave individually. It's just that he wants the same prize that I want, that's all. And he said he's happy to meet me for it, and I'm said I'm happy to meet him for it. So that won't be my next fight, but I think hopefully in early next year or something like that, it will be one soon. It won't be too far away.
That's brilliant. So for you, it's not really about the name. It's more about what they hold and sort of what they stand for and where you can go from that fight, right? It's not really the person.
Yeah, no, it's not the person. I have no grudge against anyone in boxing individually. I take all kind of ego and anything personal away from it, like people calling me out and saying this and saying that. It does nothing to me. I feel no way about it. It doesn't annoy me in the slightest. Like, I expect that. That's part of the game. It comes with it. I expect you to be in boxing and believe in yourself and think you can beat me, and that's fine, because I think the same about you. So I'm not then going to get offended because you've just decided to say it out loud, which isn't a problem. So yeah, I don't hunt for people individually. I hunt for kind of the belts, the accolades, and what I get from that situation of winning. So that's what I'm looking for.
Nice. Well, I wish you all the best of luck with that. I'm sure you don't need it anyway. Last couple questions. The biggest fight probably ever in heavyweight boxing, AJ Fury.
Mm.
What's your thoughts on that? Who do you think takes it, if you can pick a side?
I've always said Fury.
Yeah.
I've always said Fury, and I still think Fury. Don't get me wrong, I was massively impressed with Joshua when he beat Ruiz to show that he could stick to a game plan, that he could box cleanly and kind of do that and show that side. I was impressed with that, but I still just think Fury is too much kind of, he's too unorthodox for him. I think you'll give him too much to think about. There'll be too much going on. He won't really know how to deal with it, because Joshua is a great boxer. He's big, he's powerful, he's strong, but he's very straight down the line. Like, he's very, you almost want to say one dimensional, and that's almost kind of taken away from him. I don't mean that in a negative way, but I just mean he's very, you kind of know what you're going to get with him. It's all straight down the line. And I think if you go either side of that, he kind of goes off a bit and he's a bit thrown by it all. And I think Fury's the guy to just dip and dive kind of either side of that line, and just, he doesn't know kind of what's going to come from where.
Just on that, I think, yeah, Fury, I always sort of thought Fury, just because I thought he was a bit more awkward, but the way he sort of demolished Wilder in the second fight, that made me think, okay, he's got something else.
There's something there, yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah, okay, we're both saying Fury. We'll put a little bet on that, perhaps, and win some money. All right, thank you. It's been a pleasure having you on. My final hard-hitting question, what do you want your legacy to be?
I want my legacy to be that I did something for other people, like I was saying in the beginning, where that me coming from white collar then allows people from white collar to follow the same path, and me being from Ipswich, a small town that doesn't really have a boxing background, that then allows people from the same place as me to then go and do that. And that's all I kind of want from it, like on a legacy scale, is that I want to be able to just almost be a level of inspiration that, oh, Fab did it and he came from blah, blah, blah. So I can definitely do that. Like, I can go. And that's all I want. And that'd be probably the best thing to me, that one day when I'm in my, like, 60s, 70s, that some kid comes up to me and says, oh, I used to watch your fights and grow up, and now I'm doing this in boxing, or I'm doing that and I'm loving it, and it's all because I thought I couldn't do it, but I could. And that's the one for me. That's the kind of conversation I'm looking to have in about 30, 40 years.
I love that, mate. Thank you so much. The last thing, the floor is now yours. If there's anything you'd like to say, anything you'd like the people listening to go and do in terms of follow your socials and stuff like that, please do let them know now.
It's just Fabio Wardley on all my socials. So Twitter, Facebook, Instagram is just my name. And just thank you to you for having me on and sharing your fans with me and giving them a chance to see me.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, mate. It's been an inspiration for myself and I'm sure everyone listening. So thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Thank you, mate.
Cheers, mate.
If only they knew, the hub for young business minds.